Welcome to the Arts and Antique Radio Show, where your host, nationally recognized certified appraiser Elizabeth Stewart, Santa Barbara's treasure sleuth, will help you put a value on the treasures in your own home.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven?
So let's find out. How valuable is it?
Hello, 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 Santa Barbara. It's your chantress of everything valuable and beautiful, Elizabeth Stewart. I've got a really cool interview today. Mary Bridget Davies is here, and we're going to talk a little bit about A Night with Janis Joplin. It's a one-woman show, essentially. And we are here at the Ensemble Theater Company, actually. I read about this, and I read about how there's a lot of parallels between the actor and the singer and what she brings to the stage.
Sure.
And I also want to talk a little bit about the legacy, where, you know, so that I'm just really interested in the historical side of this as well. So as far as musicology, you know, what Mary Bridget is bringing forth when she's studying Janis
sure.
Joplin. I want to talk about that as we go. So anyway, first of all, dear listener, let me introduce Mary Bridget Davies. She's co-director, actually. She's a Tony Award nominee, lead role in A Night with Janis Joplin. She reprised her role in 2024, and I found her just a few minutes ago, Richard, and you've got that YouTube thing now. Yeah, which she premiered in London at the West End debut. That must have been something else. Fantastic.
Oh, it was incredible, yeah.
fantastic. Critically acclaimed live album, Freedom of My Mind, at the Power Station.
Yeah.
First compilation album, Don't Compromise Yourself, The Very Best of Mary Bridget Davies, released in 2024. Wow. And so she is a dancer trained and transitioned to singing and acting. Something Dada Improvisational Comedy Club in Cleveland. And then she was studying at the Second City Satellite Campus. Was that in Chicago as well? The Second City?
Oh, yeah, still is in Chicago.
So this marked the beginning of a series of accolades. Helen Hayes Award in 2013. Blues Blast Award nomination. Winner of the 2014 Outer Critics Circle Award, Theater Award, etc. Another album, 2019, Stay With Me, the reimagined songs of the late, oh, wow, Jerry, how do you pronounce that?
Yeah.
That what's his last
Jerry
name, Jerry?
Radaboy.
Okay,
Radaboy.
The songwriter who wrote the Joplin classics, Piece of My Heart and Cry Baby. Oh, that's another person we should talk about.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Let's see. She starred as Virginia Woolf in The Room of One's Own in 2022, a play with original music at the Cabaret 54 Low and the Public Theater, Joe's Pub, tackled the lead role as narrator in Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. She's the star of Don't Compromise production Women Who Rock You, a live concert series which made its industry showcase at Public Theater's Joe's Pub in just recently in 20
yeah last summer, not even a year ago.
It's fantastic. She's an advocate for women's rights. She's a single mother and a caregiver. Yes, I don't know how she balances this with all these credits here. She amazing.
Sleep 2 hours a night.
Sleep is underrated, but yeah. So I guess I want to start by the question that I had on my mind, Mary Bridget, is how Janis Joplin that you portray so beautifully, how this character influences Mary Bridget Davies, and if she influences, you know, your, I guess, subconscious, unconscious?
Well, for sure. This is my parents' music for sure. And so it was on in the house. And so I was just kind of like, you know, through osmosis, soaking up the blues and rock and roll without knowing that I had a future in it, you know. And
so when was this? When was this?
Oh, just when? My entire childhood. Just this. Okay. This is my parents' catalog: the blues, rock and roll, you know, southern rock, and stuff like that. So it was like I was accidentally, you know, doing research on something that was going to be very important in my career later. But for me, it was just my childhood. So I was listening to Janis, you know, by accident because it was on in the house. And once I was a teenager, I was singing along and I was like, oh, I kind of sound like her. That's funny. What a weird gift to have, you know, like wonder when I'd ever use that kind of. And it's funny because I've used it quite often since. But then I did the improv company out of college and everything. And then I was like shifting my focus, doing scene study for acting and started teaching dance instead of, you know, doing the competitive stuff. And I was like, I want to be a musician too. I want, you know, my father was a musician. So he took me out to like these blues jams and these different places around Cleveland, Ohio, where I grew up. And so like, I would just get up on stage with a bunch of strangers and just start singing a song. And, you know, you had to sign up on a sheet and things like that. And these are like the accidental parallels that Janis did herself, but I didn't know that yet. Like I hadn't read her life story. So then I was, you know, 21 years old in a blues band. With a bunch of my friends that were the same age, you know, just getting in a beaten up van and going around the country and breaking down and, you know, getting ripped off by clubs because we didn't sell enough tickets or whatever, just the real circuit. And she had actually gone through all of that as well. So then once I found her book, Love Janis, I actually went to Laura Joplin's book signing of Love Janis in like either the late 90s or early 2000s as a teenager. And I was like, well, please make it out to Mary Bridget Davies. I love your stuff. Your sister was great, whatever. And so I have an autographed copy of Love Janis from Laura Joplin. And then you fast forward years, and back in 2017, when I was pregnant with my son, she actually hired me to narrate Love Janis, the audiobook.
Oh, wow.
Right. So that's how the arc of my life with Janis has been. And so once I read the story, I was really like charmed by her because she was really intelligent and very funny. And she honestly doesn't get enough credit for that because she was only famous for roughly 3 years. And so she never really had a chance to like blossom, grow up, settle into her groove. It was all hurry up fast. Let's get this done. And then she was gone, you know? So when I first started playing her, it was a little bit of a liability because I was focused more on the young, white, hot, fast, living fast, partying, doing all the things she did because that's the experience. And, you know, you fade out, you know, you burn out if you do that. So, you know, it only took me like one or two runs of playing her to be like, yeah, so you have to treat this like you did with dance. You have to treat this like an athlete. This is a marathon. This is an athletic performance with vocals. So you need to take care of yourself. But yeah, so the good part about that is when, if you've read any of the things about her, she was a staunch businesswoman, you know? And so when, right at the end, like she was really clicking, getting into her own, and her death was very accidental. She hadn't been using drugs for months. And then it just so happened, you know, she went out to the bar with the band for drinks after they were recording the album Pearl at Barney's Beanery in Los Angeles. And then she went back to her hotel at the Landmark, and her then boyfriend and friend were supposed to hang out with her. So she had gotten the drugs like for them, like she, you know, and so she just took them because they were there and she was mad because her friend stood her up and then she never woke up, you know? So the good thing I learned about that is what not to do, you know, like just through life with Janis and just like playing her and like being in her aura for so long. And it's taught me, you know, how to stay present and fun and wild behind the mic, because that's what everybody, and it's like my favorite thing to do. But then when it's life, you know, treat it like a business and stuff. So luckily I got to get past that, you know, wild and crazy stage and straighten out, you know, a luxury she didn't have, you know? So I think about that a lot.
A question. So her sister with the book, for example, that you said that you got to mm-hmm. be the choice to do the narration. Did the sister mm-hmm. follow your career? How did this? So you take me from the book signing where, you know. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The book signing, like I said, I was a teenager. It was like in the late 90s, early 2000s. And then years later, there was a musical called Love, Janis that was a precursor to One Night with Janis Joplin. And I had auditioned for it. I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio at Playhouse Square, and I got the gig. And so when that first happened, you know, Laura and Michael Joplin, Janis's siblings, would come to opening or they'd come to the rehearsals and stuff. I've known them, you know, for a while now. But also Sam Andrew, Big Brother in the Holding Company, you know, he was the musical director. And then that's when I connected with the band and I got to actually front the band. We went to Europe on a bunch of tours. So like I cosmically have actually stood in her shoes with her band, you know, not
that's
just
fantastic.
Being in the musical. Yeah.
So it was that you were on their radar for sure.
And of course then with this, you know, we were on CBS Sunday Morning together for Broadway, doing press for Broadway, Laura and Michael Joplin and I, and we were on the Katie Couric show together. And so I've known them for a while.
I see. Okay. So now at Cleveland, now the show that you premiered in Cleveland that they attended, that the siblings attended, where was that show?
Mm-hmm. Playhouse Square.
Playhouse Square.
Connor Playhouse.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking, is there a Cleveland Playhouse? Is there?
Oh, there was Cleveland Playhouse. It was further down into the east side of Cleveland from downtown. But yes, there was Cleveland Playhouse and then Playhouse Square. And Playhouse Square is like the Broadway hub.
Okay. Yeah. I know that, you know, I think I had some in my deep, dark past. I think it did something at the Cleveland Playhouse ages ago.
Sure.
I loved Cleveland. I thought it was just underrated city. So, and really classy.
It has had a resurgence too. So it's very nice. Yeah.
Now, another interesting point I want to bring up is that you are co-author, co-director.
Co-directed,
created and written, et cetera. And so you are both the performer, and you and Brian McDonald are actually the co-directors. So you're the performer. So how does that work? I mean, do you get to say to Brian, look, I'm her. I want to do it this way. I'm sorry. How does that work?
Well, luckily we really have been talking since, geez, like summertime and having Zooms and just shedding and going, okay, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? And because I've only been the actor, you know, up until co-directing, I never had a chance to have a say in who was cast in the show as Janis's muses, as Etta James, Nina Simone, Bessie Smith, Aretha Franklin, and the blues singer. And I'm the one up there doing it every day, and I know what it takes vocally and just like stamina wise for what is required of these other women. And so there would be times when they're like, well, we liked the way this girl looked. And then, you know, she would have a bad attitude or she would lose her voice 2 to 3 shows into the week because it wasn't suited for her, the track, you know. So I finally got to be at the director's table at the auditions via Zoom, you know, and Brian and I agreed on the same girls. It was easy. We were just like, oh, you know, we're very cohesive. And there are just certain things, you know, because the show is written. We can't change the show, but we can use different projections and we can do whatever lighting we want and we can make transitions different and give the muses more stage time in their performances and really showcase them, because without them there is no Janis Joplin, which is kind of the point of this show. It's not really touching on her personal life and like her demons. This is talking about how Janis Joplin the musician became and who the women that came before her were that informed her sound.
I think let's focus on that for just one quick minute, because I think this is like such a worthy support for the show, which is that the show is sitting on the talents of what you call the muses. Yeah. And the muses, you know, and we've got Etta James, Bessie Smith, Nina Simone, Aretha Franklin, Odetta Holmes, the Chantels.
Yeah. And then the one woman that is encompassing is, she's the Blues Woman is the name of her track, because we laughed that, you know, we couldn't also have a Coco Taylor and we also couldn't have a Big Mama Thornton and then also a Sippy Wallace, or the show would be 7 hours long. You know, so the one blues woman kind of encapsulates those that we couldn't just individually call out. Yeah.
So how many muses are there?
There are four actresses that play them. But so we have Etta James at the top. Then we have the Chantels. Then we have the blues singer. We have Odetta. We have Aretha Franklin and Nina Simone. And then we have a loose ensemble called the Joplin Airs, which are just the girls that perform with Janis doing backup vocals. So there's like seven different muses in the show. When you add them all together, all the different roles that they all play.
Okay, now I understand better. Now, again, it's interesting because these are women that are talented amongst themselves and in themselves, and they're portraying, you know, these amazing talents. And the same question would arise, you know, how do they integrate their talent with the talents they're portraying? Do you have any insights on that? I mean, you're directing them.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. It's when you see the want in the person and you hear their raw, natural gift, and from a director's position, you're like, I can bring that out of you. We can, you know, Brian and I are like, you know, I this is the one I think should be doing Bessie Smith, and this is the one I think should be doing Etta James, because she's got that earthiness that we could really farm out of her. And that's exactly what has happened. Because as much as these women had time to, you know, listen to the people that they're portraying, you know, in the couple months leading up to our first rehearsal, they didn't get any direction. And then that's where we come in. And then, of course, once you put the costumes on and once you're on stage and once you're looking at the set, you know, everybody just ramps it up to 11 and brings their A game. So, yeah, there's just moments when it's like, you know what? How about when you're up there, you do X, Y, Z? And they're like, oh, OK. And then they do X, Y, Z. And you're like, perfect. That was it. But so that's so nice, because when I was only in the role of being the actor only, you know, we are not allowed to give each other notes. It's totally frowned upon. But even though I'm in this weird place where I get to co-direct and I'm also starring in the show, it's only for the betterment of the whole show. You know, in fact, like the things I have notes on have nothing to do with Janis, you know, because Brian's directing me in that moment, you know. So when I'm up on, like, we're in tech rehearsal right now, we're doing our, you know, lighting, building all the different lights and cues right now. And, you know, I'm just doing a monologue and he goes, okay, but you know what, when you're doing this, this is what you're referring to and this is what you're coming back to. So have that informed in your body when you're doing the monologue the next time. It's like, thank you. You know, it's been a pleasure, you know, and it's only, like I said, to improve the quality of the show across the board.
And, you know, the whole of the cast and crew, I was reading everybody's bio. Everybody's a narrative expert. Everybody's embodying narration. Randy Johnson is the creator and writer.
Yeah.
You know, and this is a man who has done musical portraits of Janis and
totally.
Louis Prima, Kelly Smith, Conway Twitty.
Yeah.
Let's see the other.
The Mike Tyson he did. At
Mike
the
Tyson, I'm reading that. Elvis the Concert. You know, so this is a person that is an expert at, you know, at channeling some of the great talents
that
of the world
between concert and musical, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So that was an interesting contretemps too, Mary Bridget, where it's like, okay, but, you know, he's not, it's not just one thing, Broadway, it's concert and it's person.
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, yourself and also Miss James Alsop, that person impressed me also.
Oh, yeah. Her bio is ridiculous. And she's great in the room. The girls listen to her. Her choreography is fresh and fun and new. And we were just with her yesterday going through those things, and then she'll be back, you know, to judge us up at the end of tech before opening. But yeah, a pedigree for sure of really, really impressive choreo.
Now, did you find her or did she find you?
Brian found her. Yeah.
And how do you work with her? She's not doing class with you guys. She's how do you work with her?
Oh, well, yeah. So when we do our, you know, rehearsal blocks, you know, we'll get like the 4 hours at the top of the day where she'll go through each of the numbers with the girls that are in it that has choreo. And you know, normally that's in one that I'm, you know, singing the lead. And so we're all just in the room and we're just going through our entrances and exits. And it's really funny, too, because sometimes she'll be on her feet and she's like looking at her book and what she thought for this. And she's like, and now we're in the space, so I hate it. So let's do this instead. So it's fun that it's been, you know, it's very fresh and inspired, you know, which is great. Yeah.
Okay. So that helps me a lot to understand, you know, that the different talents are, but this is such an interesting thing for me because it's all about the historical narration, but it's not, you know, it's a re-looking at something that, and a person and a time. That was my next question. I know Richard's saying I got to go to quick break, but my next question was, how much does the time period in which this occurred affect the production? You know, and you mentioned that, you know, you start to get judged up when the costumes come on and this sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I wondered, you know, the periodicity, you know, what you're harking back to, if that kind of thing matters.
Oh, absolutely. And we use, and if we can use practical microphones from the era, we do, you know, so like when it's Bessie Smith, she's standing at an all around, or when it's the Chantels, it's like that Elvis microphone. For Odetta, we fly in like a studio mic and things like that. And because everything should be as close to time period as possible, because it does matter. And it is that important, you know, same with the costumes for all of us, so the jewelry and the band is also dressed, you know, period appropriate. And it really just, it gets everybody in the zone, and it really helps the authenticity of the show. And that was Janice's biggest thing, was her authenticity. So it's good to be able to not just be like, and here we're all on headsets, like
right,
Britney
right,
Spears
right.
or something, doing something very modern and insane. You know, the men all play, all the guys in the band are playing like period appropriate guitars, like an SG or a Gibson 350 or things like that. That were the actual guitars that the musicians that played for her used to make the recordings. Same with our keyboard player. You know, we have this big Hammond organ deck built for him. And, you know, the drummer has this cool psychedelic, you know, drum head on his bass drum. And so everybody kind of got the memo that as close as we can get to the source, let's be there. So, yeah, that does help.
Yeah, I can only imagine it's important. At the same time, you know, there's got to be some sort of thing where it's like, all right, you know, the we're looking back in a way, but we're also looking forward, just because, you know, you're performing Janis Joplin, who had such a meteoric career, such a short yeah. time, and was such an influence both in, you know, female, what do you want to call it, assertiveness?
Yeah, and just social
and also
culture.
Fashion.
She would be her. Yeah. And that was just she and her best friend, Linda Gravenites. She didn't have a stylist. The first stage costume that they built together was from a kitchen tablecloth. It was that lace, you know, and they made like a bishop sleeved tunic out of the top and some pants to match. And but they both had that idea of, you know, because Janis was the first woman wearing pants on stage. Girls,
I did not know that.
Yeah, you know, standing in the background and waving, you know, tambourines and things like that in white culture, in pop culture. I mean, there were other, you know, gospel blues artists before Janis that wore pants, but Janis was the first, you know, white girl rock star. And so it was important to her to be breaking out of that mold and using fun gem tones and jewel tones and using velvet, using feathers or fur, like things that just made everything completely special, you know, so that she stood out from, because as she even said herself, when she first started playing with Big Brother and the Holding Company, she's like, I was just like a regular girl that walked out on stage. Because she said she was wearing what she wore to college. You know, she's wearing like, you know, a very demure, a very street clothes, if you will. And so after that moment of being on stage and seeing how much she loved it and how important it was for her, then the style and the fashion all went through the roof as well.
So I want, when we go, Richard's giving us a quick sign, we got to go to quick break, but I want to know a little bit more about Janice's upbringing. you know, what led her to be such a trailblazer? And then how do you feel, Mary Bridget? This is maybe something you can think about.
Okay.
I mean, your background, I beyond what the theater sent me, I looked a little bit about your advocacy for women's rights. And
yeah,
and I wondered about that and if there was a cohesiveness between you performing this breakout person in female culture and what you do, you know, as a single mom, your daily crusade, I should say.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. And it's super important. So, Richard, why don't we go to quick 10 seconds, and then I'm just going to refresh my tea. And let me just say one thing, which I have neglected to say. This is A Night with Janis Joplin. It's at the Ensemble Theater Company. Previews Wednesday, April 1st. Opening Saturday, April 4th at 8 p.m., the press opening. And running through Sunday, April 26th. That's a long run. That's great. It's at the New Vic Theater. It's 33 Victoria Street in Santa Barbara. And I'm going to announce that a couple more times and how you can get tickets, of course. And also, if you're interested, you know, maybe you're a journalist and you're listening to this, you can hear Mary Bridget Davies is a fantastic interview. And this is an incredible piece of theater as well. And so we're going to announce a little bit about that when we get back from the break. Don't turn that dial back with Mary Bridget Davies as Janis Joplin, A Night with Janis Joplin.
Oh, Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz? My friends all drive Porsches. I must make amends. Work hard all my lifetime. No help from my friends. So, oh, Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz? And oh Lord, my favorite, won't you buy me a night on the town? I'm counting on you, Lord. Please don't let me die. Prove that you love me and buy the next round. Said, oh Lord, won't you buy me a night on the town? With everybody, oh Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz?
Yes!
My friends all drive Porsches. I must make amends. Work hard all my lifetime. No help from my friends.
So, oh Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz? That's it. August 21st at the Peacock. We hope to see you there. Thank you so much.
Give you the world, but now you find, honey, that you've been misused. You can come to me, honey, and I do what you choose. I want you there. Oh, tell mama, honey, I'm bad. But you come on, tell mama, honey, what do you need? Tell your mama, baby, honey, what do you want? Tell your mama, baby, what do you need? Honey, what you want? What do you need? Honey, what you want? Listen to me. Everything all right.
Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart, and just to shout out them having the time of my life here, speaking with Mary Bridget Davies, who is co-director along with Brian McDonald of A Night with Janis Joplin, not to be missed, at the Ensemble Theater Company. Previews Wednesday, April the 1st, open at Saturday, April the 4th, 8 p.m. for the press opening. And then running through Sunday, April 26th at the New Vic Theater, 33 Victoria Street in Santa Barbara. And of course, we're talking Mary Bridget Davies during the break when all great things were said. She introduced her 8-year-old son who is traveling with her. How he's a beautiful child and studying mythology of all things. It's fantastic. And they are living, you know, part of the time, obviously, she has New York City, London, etc. But most of the time, she does call Cleveland her home base. There he is. There he is.
Mm-hmm.
You want to say hi on the radio, darling? Say hi to people.
Say hello to the radio?
Yeah.
This is a live radio interview.
Yeah, live radio. So say hi, Santa Barbara.
Hi, Santa Barbara.
There you go. Complete with accent. Fantastic. I know.
Hear it on the radio.
Yeah.
Can you hear?
We, Yeah, we'll play. We'll play. Richard, we'll, there you go. You're going to sing us a song?
No, you're silly.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So a question for you, Mary Bridget. The idea is, first of all, Janice's background. You mentioned and was a teaser at the very beginning of the show, and I think I know what you're referring to, that there's parallels, some tragic, in your life and Janice's life. And I'd like you to take us through the beginning of, you know, how Janice came to be Janice, if you would, and then also the parody. Yeah, the parody between you and she.
Well, she had always been an artistic person. She was a wonderful painter as well, which we highlight in the show, and we actually have some of her paintings, you know, copies of her paintings to show off, because I think it is worth, you know, gloating about that Janice was multi-talented and artistic across the board, you know, so we feature that in the show. But she had started off as a painter, and she really liked beatnik poetry and like the beatnik culture, but she was too young. And in fact, hippies is a derogatory term coined by the Beats, because they're like, oh, you kids just want to be hip like us, you little hippies, you know, because the beatniks were about, you know, 10, 15 years older than the hippies. And so that's really what Janice wanted to do. If she had her way, she'd be in a jazz club in the East Village, you know, in a giant oversized white painter's shirt, you know, living her best life with Jack Kerouac, you know. And so she had gone to San Francisco immediately out of a high school, like in her like very early 20s. You know, she had tried a little bit of technical school, things like that. She went to San Francisco, but kind of like for more the folk scene, beatniks, you know, whatever. And it really didn't work. You know, she got, unfortunately, like speed was very popular in San Francisco in the early 60s, late 50s, early 60s. And so she unfortunately kind of got hung up in that scene. And her friends did a show, Passing the Hat, to get her enough money to put her on a bus back to Texas, because, you know, she weighed like 80 pounds and they were worried about her. And they're like, you need to go home, because she had a very stable home life. You know, she had married parents. Her mother was a librarian and her father was a foreman at the oil refinery. And then she had two younger siblings, Laura and Michael, and who I think are something like, I think Michael's 9 years younger than Janice, but Laura was in the middle somewhere, maybe 4 years younger than Janice, but they were all close, you know? So she went home and she licked her wounds and she went and enrolled in UT. And then of course started going to the jam nights of Threadgills and meeting musicians. And a friend of hers from UT, Chet Helms, had become the kind of umbrella corporation, if you will, called the family dog of all of the kids that were in bands, you know, like Moby Grape and the Charlatans, the Grateful Dead, and Big Brother and the Holding Company before Janice was in it. And Chet was also a Texan. And so when he had blown back through town, you know, he was like, hey, well, what are you doing? Like, maybe you should come back to San Francisco, because he knew Big Brother and the Holding Company Chet knew that Big Brother and the Holding Company would be better off if Janice was in it. Let's say that. So he had to sell it to Big Brother. He had to sell Janice on the idea. Janice got to San Francisco, and then she never looked back. You know, that was her. That was her success. That's when, you know, lightning struck and all things started firing on all cylinders. But she's still, you know, very young, 24. You know, and
Can I interrupt you for 2 seconds? You mentioned a name that I'm very familiar with, the Threadgills.
Yeah, Threadgills. It was a honky tonk in Austin, Texas. It was a restaurant, and they would have live music, like for people to just get up with other people, like not like, oh, we are a band and you're going to buy a ticket to come see our show. It was just, I play guitar, you play drums, cool. What do you know? Let's do a song. So, and they're called jam nights. And so Janice would get up and sing. And it was often blues, because the blues progression is very easy and most musicians can play it. So yeah, that's where she came. Yeah.
I was going to just mention, in a former life, we might've known each other. So my son's father, I was a single mom. My son's father is British. And his, let me see, is it fifth or sixth wife? Her maiden name is Threadgill, and her father was a famous jazz musician, Threadgill. And and they actually had something to do with that club. And so my son's step sister is Pi, like That's her name. Yeah. Pi Threadgill. And Pi is a singer. Wow. Yeah.
Oh, wow. She's, that makes sense. Sure. Singer.
Yeah. So there's this, that strong stream there. Yeah. So when you said that, it was like, wow.
Yeah, that is cool.
Now, okay. So now take me to you. As far as, you know, we know the background. I didn't know she was so cerebral
I always joke, you know, there's this tableau of her because she was only famous for, you know, so many, just 3 years tops. And it's just of this like loud, wild, and, you know, brazen, this, that, the other thing. But she would, you know, be sitting in the green room, you know, backstage waiting to get ready for the show. And she'd be reading, you know, Wuthering Heights. And the band would be just warming up or something like that. And so she always had a book. Yeah, she always had a book in tow. She was always, you know, reading, you know, collections of poetry or things like that. And so, yeah, it is nice to kind of shine a light on that. And like I said, her mother was a librarian. She actually painted the mural at the library in her hometown. Janice got to do that when she was young, like maybe like 14, 15 years old. And yeah, so the way that my life went is that, you know, I was a dancer. So it was that. And then once I realized I could sing, then that's when we were like, oh, okay, well, we should do something with that. And so I started singing with, in the dance competitions, when there was like an open category or a vocal category, I would submit and do a number, and the dance moms would get really mad because I'd win like first place overalls or top honors, you know, just because the scoring's different. And they'll be like, how did a singer win the dance competition? That's, you know, it is. So it was kind of fun to be, you know, like the bad girl of bad world, but just doing what I loved to do, which I thought was pretty funny. But here, you know what I mean? I was like, oh, you know, I'm not trying to hurt anybody's feelings, but I'm sorry, I'm good at my fake job because I'm a teenager. I don't get paid for it. But yeah, that was fun for me. And, you know, because like, you know, mischief, who doesn't like a little bit of mischief? So then when I went to college, that's when it got to the point where I was like, I don't want to be here. It was the same that she did. I was like, I want to be in a band now. I want to, like, why do I need a degree from college on performance when I could be out performing right now, you know, because I was going to, you know, school for performing arts and stuff. So I told my parents, I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. And they said, well, you're going to have to get a job and take care of yourself. And I said, I will. And so I worked at UPS from loading package trucks from about, you know, 11 p.m. till 9 a.m. in the morning overnights. And then that's when I auditioned for that comedy company and got into with them, and then got to start traveling and going to Chicago and back and forth. So it all just, but then I was like, but the singing thing, like, I still want to sing. So then my father being a musician, my godfather being a musician, you know, they were like, well, we know some jam nights. And I went down to Robert Lockwood Jr.'s jam night. Now Robert Lockwood Jr. was Robert Johnson's stepson, you know, the original blues man, the mythos, the, you know, sold his soul at the crossroads for blues fame. So his stepson was came to Cleveland at some point, you know, way before I was born, like the 70s or something, and had a standing jam night on Wednesday night. So then I started going to those and started meeting the musicians and cutting my teeth, as they call it. And then I was asked to be in a band within like a month or two. And that was it. Then that was my calling. That's when it all started happening. And just because I am a strong singer and a female, any club we play at to be like, do you do any Joplin? And I'd be like, you guys, we really need to start doing it because people want it. And then when I told you I had met Laura Joplin and got the book and read the book. And when Love Janice had come to town, I think in like 1998 or something like that, I was still in school. I was too young to go. And so I didn't get to see it. But then it came back through in the late 2000s. And they were looking for an actress. And so that's when I auditioned for that and made it. And then I moved to Kansas City and started my own blues band out there. And we won the second place international blues challenge, like overall after like 500 bands, and got a record, and we were touring and it was going great. And then I got an email from a friend that was like, there's going to be a new Janis Joplin show that's probably going to Broadway and you need to audition for it. So then I did. So then I went to the city, and it was Fleet Week and it was hot as all get out. And we auditioned for, you know, what was then called One Night with Janis Joplin for the regional. And I got it, and I got to do it in my hometown. The first city was Cleveland. So I got to go and audition and do it. And then I was the alternate. And then I assumed the lead role in my hometown. I got to open the show in my hometown. And then after that, I was number one Janice, which was great. And then we took it to Broadway.
Oh, that's fantastic. And how did we in Santa Barbara get so lucky to find you?
Yeah, well, because the show had never been open for public licensing before. You know, it was just any time that it was open, any time it was up, it was, presented by, the Joplin Estate or, whoever was behind it and the Broadway producers. But so Scott, it's like, how many names do I have? Scott had been like, listen, I've been looking for the show for a long time. And finally Broadway licensing said, hey, the show that you've been wanting is available for purchase. And then what he said immediately, he wanted Brian to be the director. And then they said, well, gosh, if we could, let's just go for the long shot and see if Mary Bridget's even available, willing, wants to come. And it worked out perfectly. And here we are. So, yeah.
Well, that is fantastic. And so everybody always wants to know how a famed performer thinks of Santa Barbara and if you like it and if your son likes it here. And
we love it here.
our little big town.
I love your little big town. It's funny because it's, you have like your upscale downtown area, but then there's like cozy neighborhoods and, my son is doing kind of like a school program out here. So he's out in, Vieja Valley. So we're getting to, Hope Ranch, we're getting to spread out, but we've been in rehearsals like all day, every day since we've gotten here. So once we open the show and have like a day off, then we'll get to go to Stearns Wharf. Is that what it's called?
Yeah,
and the aquarium and like the fun, but right now, we're just work. But
right.
But everything that we've experienced so far has just been lovely. So, yeah.
Don't Turn That Dial back with Mary Bridget Davies as Janis Joplin, A Night with Janis Joplin.
Wow, let me call him a lover, call him a man, call him a lover, get the best I can, come on, hop up and love, hop up and McGee, yeah. On and 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 on. I say, hey, 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 hop up McGee, yeah. Oh, thank you very much. Woo!
Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart, and just to shout out, I'm having the time of my life here speaking with Mary Bridget Davies. I think it's so interesting. So Scott found that, this was a licensing that he asked you. I mean, what is so interesting for me, being a Santa Barbara person and knowing the history of Santa Barbara, is this town was built by, literally built by off-the-wall women who happened to... I'm thinking of the Natural History Museum. I'm thinking of the Historical Museum. I'm thinking of the Art Institute. I'm thinking of the Art Museum. I'm thinking of all of these. I'm thinking of the Botanical Gardens. So, Mary Bridget, all of these places that were established, in the first quarter of the 20th century were established by women.
Yeah,
and this is such a unique town in this way because... I'm not saying that the women had nothing to do with being attractive and actually attracting maybe for their fourth or fifth or sixth husbands, very wealthy men. And then they inherited their estate. And then once their estate was the women's estate, they'd say, okay, so now I'm going to establish a botanic garden. Here's 65 acres.
100%.
And now I'm going to establish the Natural History Museum. Here's my mansion. Now I'm going to establish the Music Academy of the West. Here's my mansion.
Yeah, like true philanthropy. Right. Yeah.
And so the town, I can't think of one institution that didn't have that kind of female leadership. In fact, we were saying our kind of classy downtown, it has a certain look because of a certain woman, and the woman was named Pearl Chase. And the first quarter of the 20th century, Pearl said, I want the architecture of this town to look this way. And so she studied the architecture and brought in people that she thought were going to be beneficial to establishing a face.
Absolutely.
And it was all female, all female. She brought in two female architects, by the way, in the 1920s, 1930s. So, you know, it was like, okay, so this was a little, it's so interesting that you're performing this wonderful female role in this town where, I mean, you, it, all of our benefactresses were benefactresses. And I know, so probably no one's, no one's probably told you that, but this is,
That's a nice little nugget of wisdom to be bestowed upon me today. So thank you for that.
Yes, and I think Katy Perry also is born and raised here, and she's established. Yeah, quietly established a little school, and I mean, there's all these wonderful. Great. Yeah, there's also a jazz and blues. She's wanting to be anonymous, so I won't say, but she's established a school for children so that they can actually learn jazz and blues and the recording industry. And she's a very wealthy woman who said, I'm giving this. She lost a child, and she said, I'm dedicating this particular school to my child. Sure. And this is all the legacy of Santa Barbara is like this. It's just so interesting.
It feels right. Yeah. It's just as soon as we got here, just, you know, because we had to fly from the East Coast and we landed at LAX and we jumped in the rental car. And of course, you know, my son, that was a long day. So he was conked out and I was just driving up here. And as soon as we got out, I mean, he's just like, oh my God, it's beautiful. Look at these flowers. Oh my God, look at that building. It's so, and I'm like, I know. And just thinking that like a woman was the mastermind behind it.
Totally. Mastermind. But also, you know, we still have, what do you call it? Her foundation here is still super important. And it's, you know, everybody's very religiously adhering to her legacy as far as, you know, and where you're performing, actually, I know that the legacy of the theater there is like, she said, I only want a certain height of all the buildings. Other than that, we're going to be LA one day. So I mean, it's down to the theater that you're performing in.
Yeah, no, that is super important.
So, and it was a lot of female architects were like, okay, we're going to keep this human scale. And so that's a lot of the legacy here. Anyway, I'm going on, and I just want to give another shout out. Super interesting conversation with Mary Bridget Davies, A Night with Janet Joplin. You got to see this, my dear listeners, and it's Ensemble Theater Company, and you know where that is. It's at the New Vic Theater, 33 Victoria Street in Santa Barbara. It's going to be previewing Wednesday, April 1st, opening Saturday, April 4th at 8 p.m. That's the press opening. And then also, I told you guys, if you wanted to get in touch for press materials, you're going to call David Elzer at 818-508-1754. And David can hook you up with an interview and press materials as well, as he was so kind to do. And catch Mary Bridget Davies out of rehearsal. That was a challenge, and I really appreciate that.
This is our dinner break. I have to get my costume back on in literally like 30 minutes.
We appreciate it so much. Okay, the show's running through Sunday, April 26th at the New Vic Theater. You all know how to get there. You all know how to go. And I thank you very much. Thank you so much for speaking to us, both of you, Mary Bridget Davies.
I know, listen, Elizabeth's saying thank you for speaking to her, Miles.
Thank you, Miles. Thank you, Miles. I look forward to meeting you down at the Natural History Museum.
Yeah, we're going to get to go to do all that fun stuff once we're open and we have the time, right? We belong to the theater until we open at this point.
Yes.
That sounds great.
Thank you so much, Mary Bridget. I sure appreciate it.
Thank you. You too. Have a great one.